Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. Our guest today is Kat Kamick, a Republican congresswoman from Florida and a member of the House Agriculture Committee. She discusses USDA's rollout of market relief payments and the possibility of adding farm bill elements into budget reconciliation. But first, here's this week's headlines. China renewed hundreds of expiring registrations for U.S. facilities exporting pork and poultry to the country this week. Many contracts expired on Sunday, including some run by meat processing giants Tyson Foods, Smithfield, and Cargill. The Agriculture Department reported last month that Chinese customs officials were not responding to requests to make progress on the expired registrations. Several hundred beef facilities also saw their licenses expire on Sunday, but are still awaiting renewal. A federal judge ruled the Department of Government Efficiency's attempts to shut down the U.S. Agency for International Development were likely unconstitutional. The judge ordered DOGE to restore computer access to all employees and also indefinitely stop them from making additional cuts to the agency. The DOGE team must also submit a plan within 2 weeks, allowing employees to come back to work at their headquarters in Washington, D.C. However, the judge's order does not reverse any firings. The president said his team would appeal the decision. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins announced the release of $10 billion in economic assistance for row crop farmers. The funding was authorized by the spending bill passed at the end of last year. Producers can sign up for the Emergency Commodity Assistance Program, known as ECAP, until August 15th. They will initially receive 85% of the payment they are eligible for to ensure that there is enough funding for all who qualify. The remainder of payments will be distributed depending on how much money is still available. This week's guest is Kat Kamick, a congresswoman from Florida and a member of the House Agriculture Committee. We asked her if the ECAP payments will be enough to get her state's producers through another growing cycle.
Is it going to be the magic bullet that gets us into the next growing season? Probably not. There's got to be a number of factors that are going to be needed to address in order to actually get us to a place where we can get some stability. I mean, input prices have been coming down in terms of cost of diesel, but we need to make sure that everything is coming down across the board. And then, of course, you have the regulatory environment and things that are outside of the control of producers. In Florida, the adverse wage effect, it's absolutely crushing us. And so there's got to be a number of things that get fixed in order for us to get on some solid footing. But this is a good first step. Any sort of relief is, of course, always welcome. And it's really a departure from the last 4 years when we've seen basically radio silence out of the Department of Agriculture. So I commend Secretary Rollins for taking this necessary first step.
You had the opportunity to tour areas in your district that were damaged by the hurricanes with FEMA this week. What did you see, you know, months after those storms, and what are the impacts the agriculture industry is still feeling from multiple hurricanes in such a short amount of time?
Well, it goes without saying that, you know, Florida, we have really unfortunately become the model of how to navigate natural disasters because we take so many hits. My district, for example, took 3 major hurricanes in the span of 13 months. And, you know, even aside from those 3, we had Milton, we had Ian, we had Irma. And those really do add up in terms of the devastation, particularly as we're talking about ag. There was very little response from USDA to the point that we were on the phone with Secretary Vilsack demanding strike teams, and strike teams never showed. In fact, in the last decade, we have yet to see a strike team from USDA on the ground here in Florida. Now, Florida being such a big ag state, you would think this would be commonplace, but it's actually not. So we had been working with the previous administration to try to embed some folks within USDA into FEMA, because USDA, respectfully, had been useless. We never were able to qualify, being such a heavily specialty crop state, for any of the relief programs, either as a result of AGI or just simply not being covered by any of the commodity lists. So we have some real challenges to address in that space. So Florida being, you know, a year-round producer state, this is something that we always have to contend with these disasters, working hand in glove with University of Florida as they're doing the assessments after the storms. We've always been very cautious of, let's make sure we get these estimates in a timely fashion so we can get them to USDA. But what we've seen is there's not any consideration really for infrastructure, whether it's packing houses, fences, pivots. I mean, in one county alone, we had 50 some odd pivots just in one very, very rural small county. That everyone knows the cost of a pivot these days. It's not cheap. And so we have a lot of work to do in educating people on how to engage. In talking with the new FEMA administrator, administrator Cam Hamilton, he was saying that he would love to actually embed people from USDA in their teams because they want to take a different approach, really, when it comes to a survivor focus and how they're going to get responses to people on the ground, not in weeks, not in months, not in years, but in hours.
There's an additional $21 billion in disaster assistance that was passed in the year-end spending bill that Secretary Rollins has said will be released soon. Of course, your district is in need of those funds. Have you discussed a timeline on that with the secretary?
I'm actually meeting with the secretary here in the next couple of weeks to talk about that and a number of different issues. The challenge that we've always had is the bureaucracy and the red tape that holds people up. You just don't have the cash flow in many of these operations to sustain over the course of many, many months, even years. It just doesn't work that way. Anybody in agriculture knows that. And with the way that lending is going, it's making it virtually impossible to get financing for the following year. And so we're really in a pickle. We have to get this released now, and we have expressed the urgency on this, and she understands that.
We'll be back with more from Congresswoman Kat Kamick right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who help build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural home buyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. There's discussion that the budget reconciliation bill Republicans want to pass this year could include parts of a new farm bill. We asked Florida Congresswoman Kat Kamick if this is the most likely way to get important pieces of the bill, like higher reference prices, enacted.
There's been talk about, could we include elements of farm bill in reconciliation? And theoretically, yes, we can. That has not been done in a while, but it's something that is absolutely feasible. I think, again, to my point of, we need to have that certainty now for producers. That should be top of mind. And I've heard, okay, we're going to try to get this done by the beginning of fall. I'm sorry, but we can't go until the fall for answers. And so there is a lot of us Aggies on the Hill that are concerned that this is going to end up getting pushed to the back burner, as it has in the past. And we just can't keep kicking the can down the road. So whether we go and try to put the farm bill with some modifications on the docket and pass it out of the House, work with our Senate counterparts and do it the traditional old school way, or if we want to try to do it through reconciliation, I think this version of reconciliation, probably it wouldn't be a part of, it would have to be the second FY26 reconciliation package. And again, at that point, you're getting into the politics of, do we have the firepower to stick together in order to pass this all the way through the process? Because reconciliation, it's a beast. It is an arduous process from start to finish. And so even though you avoid the 60 vote threshold in the Senate, you have to really reconcile the House, the Senate, and really be mindful of revenues, impacts, outlays. And the Farm Bill is a beast of a bill in itself.
The Farm Bill has historically been a generally bipartisan piece of legislation. Would putting some of those pieces into budget reconciliation change the bipartisan nature of these farm policy issues in the future?
Absolutely. Because reconciliation, it's a hodgepodge of different things, right? So this first reconciliation bill that we have, it is border security, it's energy policy, it's tax policy, it's regulatory reform. There's a number of pieces of legislation that are going to be going in this package. And so, of course, this turns into a partisan food fight, no pun intended, since we're talking ag. But what we're dealing with then is, okay, Republicans, given the margins of 217 to 215 in the House, we can't afford to lose a single vote. That is the challenge. So we hang tough, we can actually get something done. And then, of course, the Senate has the votes. First time, I think, in 50 plus years that the Senate has had a bigger majority than the House. They can get their part done. But it really comes down to the House leading in this way. And so instead of all eyes on the Senate, it's really going to be all eyes on the House. When you're doing a reconciliation package that would have something like farm bill and probably some other elements in it, it would be pretty partisan simply because you're looking at a very contentious midterm coming up next year.
There's concern in farm country right now about the prospects for a new trade war. But many Florida growers say they have another view because of the competition they face from imports. How do you expect the president's trade policy to affect your farmers?
You know, I will say I am very optimistic about the president and his team. Really, since before NAFTA, you go back to that point in time, we had, and I'll use tomatoes as an example. We had about 250 commercial growers in the state of Florida, and then NAFTA hit, and then we had USMCA, and there was never a seasonal or perishable provision included in any of these trade deals. So what ended up happening is it crushed our domestic production. And now it's not just Florida that is feeling this, it's not just tomatoes, right? Texas gets this, Michigan is getting it on asparagus, California gets it with a lot of their fresh produce. Without those types of protections, there really can be no fair trade, right? And free trade. Because what's happening is what we're paying in an hour in wages, Mexico is paying in a day. The regulations that we have to adhere to here in the United States are completely different than what Central and South America and Mexico are having to abide by. What President Trump and his team is trying to do is level the playing field. The Americans have been taken advantage of for decades, and we have always played with one arm tied behind our back. So I know that our producers are concerned about some of the tariffs because, of course, when that talk comes up, agriculture becomes a prime target for retaliatory tariffs. Our job is to, one, open up new markets so that we can ease that pain. Two, negotiate better trade deals so that it is, in fact, a level playing field. Three, make sure that we're doing the enforcement so that those deals are upheld. And four, we need to be focusing on creating more markets here domestically, opening up where we can address food deserts, giving these lifelines to smaller producers so they can actually really survive.
Wonderful. Representative Kamik, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion. But first, Andrew Hunneke looks at how much money per acre states could receive from the Emergency Commodity Assistance Program.
The Agriculture Department is releasing $10 billion in economic assistance payments this week to row crop farmers around the country. Sign-ups started this week and will continue through August 15th. Payment rates will vary depending on the crop that farmers grew last year. The data on this map is featured in a private analysis from Terrain Ag that was conducted after Congress passed the authorizing legislation in December. Terrain estimated the average amount of money each state could get from the Emergency Commodity Assistance Program per acre. You can see how the numbers would vary by state, with states in the Southeast and Southwest receiving the most assistance per acre. Under USDA's rules, producers will initially receive 85% of the payment they are eligible for to make sure there's enough money for everyone who needs it. Once we pass the August 15th sign-up deadline, farmers could receive a second payment after that date. It's important to point out these numbers are just estimates and not exact totals. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says her administration is also working to release about $21 billion in disaster assistance that Congress also authorized in December. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line. which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back. Leaders are considering including some elements of the Farm Bill in budget reconciliation, including a boost to reference prices. We asked T.A. Hawks with Monument Advocacy if this is a feasible option.
Yeah, well, we've seen, obviously 4 years ago, we saw the IRA make investments in the conservation title. If they want to move some provisions in this reconciliation package, it seems like the commodity programs would be the best are the most likely to have some of those funds included. But I mean, the path for reconciliation is far from sure. And to Mike's point, having a farm bill done, whether or not there's a reconciliation package, really is the best path forward. But I know, you know, we've heard members for 2 years now say that they need new dollars in the farm bill to get it done. And this might be the best path to do that.
TA, do you think that including some of those farm bill elements will actually help pass the reconciliation bill?
Well, I mean, the reconciliation bill, I've worked in the Senate for about 15 years, and the reconciliation packages that I saw go through are all, you know, they are by nature partisan. So I don't know if it would help pass a reconciliation package, but it might make the farm bill process smoother if they can get new dollars included now that they can later include in the Farm Bill base titles.
And Mike, we'll bring you into the conversation here. The Farm Bill is historically a very bipartisan piece of legislation. How could including these elements in budget reconciliation change that and change the nature of many of these farm policy issues in the future?
The Farm Bill takes a big community to pass. And the Farm Bill coalition that's been built up over the years does a lot of work to make sure that this farm policy effort, that food policy, that conservation, that research, that rural development, all of that comes together to work together and get a farm bill done. And each farm bill path to passage is different. Think about how things played out in 2017 and 2018 to get that bill done, certainly in 2008 or 2014. They all have different paths to get there. But one thing is the same throughout all those. At the end, it's a bipartisan big coalition to get it done. And I think that needs to be kept front of mind, top of mind in the process here in the months ahead. If reconciliation can deliver more dollars and more investment in our food system, it's great. But we also need to be careful about what happens along the way. So hopefully it can help press the issue and build the political support to pass a strong 5-year farm bill soon.
And TA, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm an eternal optimist. I don't think I would be around in town 25 years later, were I not. So I agree. I think it, getting a farm bill done is possible. It takes a lot of hard work, and there's a lot that needs to be done. We've got two new ranking members on the House and Senate Ag Committees who are eager to get to work, it seems. And I think their chairs are excited and saying the right things about working together to get a farm bill done. So I'm hopeful that in the months ahead, they can figure out ways to negotiate behind closed doors. Obviously, they're not going to do that in the press, but that they can figure out a way to come together on a farm bill that really does work for the whole farm bill community, which, as Mike pointed out, is a very big tent.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. President Trump has already imposed tariffs and has promised more in the coming months. Mike Strands with the National Farmers Union says agriculture is being hit directly.
Yeah, we've already seen some jumpiness in the markets, certainly in the last few weeks, with the threat of tariffs being imposed or some of the shifts in how those tariffs have been imposed and just the varying narratives about how that's going to play out in the weeks ahead. So there's some uncertainty on top of an already uncertain farm economy. Our members have spoken up recently during our national convention just a little more than a week ago, where members identified the threat of tariffs or the tariffs themselves as being another source of uncertainty. So we're keeping a close eye on that and want to make sure that we can smooth out some of this volatility as best we can.
Secretary Rollins says she'll compensate farmers for the impact of a trade war, but some commodities have still never fully recovered their Chinese market from the last trade war. Should farmers be worried about losing markets long term?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, last time President Trump was in office, there were a number of payments made to farmers, and I think that helped to alleviate some of the concerns. But you're right. I mean, we heard, we continue to hear that markets never recovered when some of those trading partners changed from the U.S. to Brazil or other places. Those markets didn't come back. So I think there is anxiety in the farm group economy, the farm economy and the farm groups by not having clarity over where the Trump administration might go with some of these tariff concerns.
USDA began releasing $10 billion in market relief payments this week. In the short term, is this enough to support the farm economy through another growing season?
It's really important to have these payments going out and soon. It was a big to-do and a big effort in November and December last year during the lame duck session just to get this $10 billion emergency package through, in addition to the disaster $21 billion that has yet to be implemented, and I know USDA is working on that very hard right now. It'll help, certainly, to bridge things a bit here, but getting back to the uncertainty, the best thing we can do, that Congress can do right now, is come together and pass a strong farm bill, and that's where farmers' union members are especially concerned and are going to focus our attention to make sure lawmakers can get to a point to pass the comprehensive, strong five-year farm bill. This disaster package helps, but this is just the start.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke has an update on the yearly changes of food at home costs.
The high cost of eggs has gotten a lot of attention, but prices for other groceries are rising as well. However, food inflation this year is expected to be close to the historical average. This chart shows the annual percent change in food at home costs from 2004 to 2024, as well as the yearly average and the projected total for this year. According to USDA, the cost of eating at home is expected to increase by a little more than 3% this year. The historical average is 2.6%. This would be higher than last year, where the grocery prices only rose about 1.5%, but not as high as the 2 years before, specifically in 2022, where the rate peaked near 11.5%. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Next week, both the House and Senate will be back in session after a week of recess. Former Congressman Ruhl Grijalva's funeral is scheduled for Wednesday. On Tuesday, the House Agriculture Committee will hold a hearing examining the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. The World Food Prize will host a dialogue in Washington Tuesday, discussing steps to alleviate world hunger. Check our website for the latest on all of this and more. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.